The Honest Wargamer, an honest and independent show run by gamers for gamers. We bring you the latest in critical meta discussions, zany list tech, and deep dive discussions about the hobby as a whole. We are supported by our fantastic patrons and Twitch subscribers. If you'd like to support us and join the team, that would be awesome. Don't forget all you hydro homies, stay hydrated. Now get yourself comfy. The gang's here for Ladies' Night. It's 40K Thursdays.
Hello, welcome to the Honest Wargamer. I'm your host, Rob. Welcome to the Age of Sigmar Stats Center. I'm joined by Owen. He likes jam sandwiches with an orange juice, Jackson. I didn't know. That was terrible. I'd like to start again.
Hello. I do like both of those things, though. That's correct. Go on, honest, go, Rob. Go. Sorry.
Honest,
go.
Hello, welcome to the Honest Wargamer. I'm your host, Rob. It's the Age of Sigmar Stats Center every Monday live on Twitch, and I'm joined by my co-host, Owen. Don't stop him now, Jackson.
Hey, Rob. How you doing, man?
Yeah. I feel a lot better about the second time round. That was really good. I'm tired. Owen, how are you?
Yeah, double tired. Oh, I've got quite slitty little eyes anyway. And they're just, I can hardly see anything out of them today. But we're tired because we had a wonderful day of watching lots of Warhammer, didn't we?
We did. It was a great day. So, yeah, we did a day of live coverage yesterday, which I loved. We were just talking about before the show started. We're going to work out when we can like do some more of that. Like, expect to hear from that on our socials and coming out of my mouth at some point soon. That was exciting. I'm also excited as well because I've realized just how close we are to Christmas. Hence Christmas Rob this week. I shall be known as every week. Okay. I like to change it up. Last week it was long-winded Rob. This week it's Christmassy Rob. Owen, you looking forward to Christmas?
Yeah. I don't think I'm quite as hype as you are. I was always the curmudgeon-y guy in the office when I used to work for a company who would be like, no Christmas music till the 20th and all that sort of thing. So I'm probably the Scrooge to your, or the Grinch to your Mrs. Christmas or whatever. I'm excited. It's nice to hang out with your family and stuff, but I don't think I'm going to get quite as hype as you.
I'm going to do an all-day stream on Christmas. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to hang out on the stream and eat some turkey, but not turkey because I'm a vegetarian. So probably just some mashed potatoes, and I'm going to just do a stream. It's going to be the whole day. It's going to be great. Really looking forward to it. Okay, so today we are talking about stats. Now, it's December, and traditionally, the Age of Sigmar seasons, that's right, I'm calling it. Yeah. I'm being the guy that calls it, and I'm saying it as it is, Owen. The seasons are 6 months long. They run from summer to Christmas. Then we do January back to summer. Those are the two seasons of the year for Age of Sigmar. And it's winding down now. Obviously, you've got Christmas coming up. And of course, I mean, it would normally wind down anyway, even non-COVID. But obviously, with COVID rampant across the world right now, like in some big upticks, there's been no events. So the only event that happened that I saw, obviously, was the event that we did yesterday. I haven't seen anything else. But, of course, if you guys, for some reason, are interested in telling us about events that have happened anywhere else in the world, I put a link in the chat. Thanks, James. That's nice, yeah? I put a link in the chat. You can join our Age of Sigmar Stat Center's Discord. We started to set up some live channels for different events happening around the world, which is super sweet. And the guys have like started like they're like, oh, you need to get like a channel for this country or that country. Big shout out to Joe for putting all of the different states in for America for me, which was really useful. So that's one. And do you know what? One of the things I found really interesting so far, Owen, this week is there are loads of like 10, 12, 14 man events that happen all across the US pretty much weekly. We won't have the conversation about COVID or anything like that. And I'm assuming that those events were pretty low-key anyway, because it's such a huge country and so disparate. Really, it's 50 different countries, really. To an Englishman, it is. Anyway, to an Australian, they're like, it's not even big, mate. They ain't even got any proper sand.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
Keep going with the accents, Rob.
It's what everyone's here for. It is interesting talking about like local metas, especially... I wanted to talk about this conversation a little bit because it leads into the TTS event from yesterday. So the local metas, obviously, you've got your, maybe you're in Finland and there's, you know, you've got your 30, 40 really good players, or just generally players, you know, or you're in your small Western Australian town or whatever the situation is. And you've got, this guy's fucking brilliant. And it's like, you don't really hear about it because they only really attend smaller smaller events. You know, a good example would be Jimmy the Page, Jimmy the Hand, over in New Zealand. You know, everyone's like, this guy's a fucking rock'em sock'em cowboy. Yeah. And it's like, okay, but we don't really hear much about your events because they're not massive, you know. And then he comes over to CanCon and just takes the prize home and runs with it. So, you know, that which is the largest Age of Sigmar event in the world. So I think there's something to be said for that. And I think what's good about that is that leads us into TTS and it leads us into the event coverage from yesterday. Because yesterday, Owen, the thing that impressed me was not only the skill level, but the skill level of players from all around the world in different places. We had people from all over, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there were players from, yeah, we talked about it yesterday and on Friday. I think we had maybe around about 10 or 12 different countries, you know, from, you know, all over the globe represented. And people are grinding on TTS, on lots of different chats, different Discord channels. There are a lot of games going on and the skill level of players all around the world is really high. Yeah. And I think that's reflected in you know, looking at the top. Let's have a quick look. Top five players. They're from we're looking at Spain, Denmark, Finland, America, Finland. And then there's three UK players in a row. So, yeah, it's just because there's not a huge amount of players playing in a certain area doesn't mean that that has then a reflection on the skill level. You know, they can be a big fish in a small pond, but then still perform really well when they you know, come into a bigger event. So, it was great. I mean, the skill level yesterday in a lot of the games was really high. I mean, we saw in Casper's game in the stream game, like he put together some big balls turn one plays and he, you know, got the win based on, you know, some really impressive sort of turn one strats. I think the skill level is really high and people are really, like, especially with TTS, like people, because Broken Realms were in play, people are picking up things with new rules, creating lists, testing them with their pals and then playing them. So you might play like 7 or 8 games with a list in a week. So it's kind of like TTS is quite a hothouse in that regard, that you can really, you know, craft a list in quite short time because there's so many opponents all around the world looking to play games.
Yeah, I think that's a key testament to what you've organized with the Hammer Time events. And also, like, it's just got me excited. You know I love doing coverage, I mean, like, it's my thing. And big shout out to people like Idiot Wind in the chat, who's saying, I watched a couple of games on the Discord, then I listened to the stream back. Watching with commentary is night and day in terms of entertainment. No, that's the purpose of it, really. It's meant to be like both informative and entertaining. I think there is a crunch line of watching someone play a game for 3.5 hours, which even in the best presented battle reports, I can't cross that line. And I do think if you get some, would take me out of the conversation, I'm not talking about me, any commentators, it makes it more, no, not any commentators, because I've also heard commentary. Good commentators really make a great game, is what I'm trying to say. So looking forward to doing that more in the future. And I think it's an interesting little facet as well, Owen, that I was thinking about as well. It's because we've been able to stay abreast, thanks to the TTS gaming, you know, and events around the world, we've been able to stay abreast of, like, where the game is at and what's going on. But there was a pretty, before we talk about the results, there was a fairly unique meta yesterday, right? Which, we've talked a lot, because we're coming towards the end of this season, as said earlier. We've talked a lot about how there's been some dominant armies. Seraphon, very much so. Like, hyper-dominant. Hyper-hyper-dominant this year. And I was to give a prize out at the end of this 6 months to the top faction, Seraphon would get the prize off me. It wouldn't be KO. It'd be Seraphon. I think they smash way, way harder. Mm-hmm. I don't know about if you agree with that, Owen, or you got any thoughts?
Yeah, perhaps. I have been tracking how everybody's done since the sort of TTS really kicked off and became the main outlet for gamers since COVID. So I've got records of all the winners and the top fives from the last sort of 9 months, however long this has been going on. And that does back up that statement regarding Seraphon. Perhaps we could throw them throw them at LLV or something at the end of the year and you know, get some stats together. But
So whenever me and LLV would do the stat shows, obviously tracking these trends would be a really interesting thing, and also looking at their impact. And one of the big takeaways, I think, was the impact conversation already happening in the chat. One of the big conversations about the impact of the Marathi book. We saw a lot of the new Marathi stuff on play. We start to see its first example. We've been talking about the pre-game Liberator move, so we put that on game one. didn't really pan out, and I think it ended up going 0-3. There were more than one version of that list, but it didn't rock, right? That's not like the takeaway headline that it's about the Stormcast. The takeaway headline is that it's about them turtles.
Yeah, it's about that Deepkin. I mean, that does segue very nicely into... I had a quick little look at how... Because Broken Realms Morathi was legal in the tournament, and that really did see a massive uptake in people bringing Daughters of Cain, Eidneth Deepkin, and then Stormcast. No Idolaters, unfortunately, Rob. That one hasn't really hit home.
Is it Idolaters or Idolaters?
No, I'm not going to do that.
Potato. Yeah, that's... That Idolator. Sounds tasty. I'll have two.
Yeah. either way, however you say it, the rules are pretty shocking. We didn't have any Idolaters. But yeah, the Stormcast list, as you say, obviously, there's so many factors, and this always gets brought up. You've got your opponents, you've got the player level of the person piloting the army. There's a lot going on. So everything that I'm about to say has to be taken with a pinch of salt. But the Stormcast armies, one went 0-3 and the other three went 1-2, one win, two losses. So they didn't, you know, the way in which they need to be played needs to be sort of practiced even more. But they didn't really do particularly well yesterday. The Daughters of Cain armies, one went 1-2, two of them went 2-1, and Antu, who you saw in the stream, got a 3-0. It was the Deepkin Deepkin part of that that Broken Realms book which really saw the best results. One player went 1-2. There were 2-2-1s and two players won all their games and finished in the top five. And obviously, as you know, there's been sort of chats about the strength of those lists and in particular that Leviadon, which seems to have had a huge uplift in power.
Efficacy. Yeah. So one of the, it's my new word, like I've been saying it all week. I don't know why I keep saying efficacy and I'm like, I mean, it's a cool word, but I sound like a pretentious twat. Right. So one of the let's talk about what the turtle really brings to the table, I think. And also just a notable example. There was no KO. There was no Cities of Sigmar. There were no Fire Slayers. And I think that no Fire Slayers conversation isn't going to really play into Deepkin. Although I think actually the reason maybe you didn't see Fire Slayers was because of how good Deepkin are, especially with that ability to stop you doing a 3-inch pile in. I think that works really well into Fire Slayers. And then I would argue that's the reason that we saw Archeon do overly, overly well. But we'll talk more about that in a bit. But the turtle, I'm going to... Oh, I didn't prep this super fast, so vamp for me for a second, Owen. We're going to talk about the War Scroll on the turtle and exactly what he brings to the table. It's obviously the conversation is going to start with the Void Drum.
I've got the scroll in front of me where I can sort of get us started. It's also really interesting that he's just everything got a buff, didn't it? So I was looking like his Razor Shell Harpoon launchers, 24-inch range, 8 attacks, 3s and 3s, minus 1, 1 damage. Mm-hmm. Apart from the Mortal Wounds, that's effectively 4 of the new Bloodstalkers that everyone really is raving about. So, just as a sort of... and then 24-inch range, 10-inch move, which doesn't bracket. So, 34-inch, some nice shots there. All those melee profiles got improved. And he will crush a lot when he's buffed by Volturnus, you know, like plus 3 attacks on the scything fins, which do a flat 4 damage if he's able to look after them. But to be honest with you, I did see the Leviadons being used very much as bullies in a lot of the games. And then almost being thrown away, and then the other stuff winning the games in the late game. Like the Leviadons didn't tend to survive the whole game, but the impact they had by being able to move in and alpha striking Leviadon, and then the whole shooting army of other players having to shoot into them, what was definitely a thing.
Let's talk about that, because its survivability is significant, right? It starts on a 2-up save. Which is pretty, pretty scary. Now, it's a monster, so it won't gain... So Eidolith start with cover. Basically, they're tied. Turn one, they start with cover. So they're all basically, effectively, on a plus one save. And then, because of the Void Drum, he gives an aura of plus one save around. So effectively, the Eidolith Deepkin have gone from an army that got plus one save turn one to an army that's got plus two save turn one. And we've seen that already used so, so well in Tempest Eye. Tempest Eye armies work already really, really, really well because they just rock off at having that plus one save. Plus two save turn one is wild. And that's really key because Eidneth Deepkin are effectively, they have a huge win condition. And that huge win condition is, and I honestly don't care what Deepkin player you are, if any answer to this not being it, I don't agree with at all, is you get to turn three and you've won the game. Like, that's the win condition for Eidneth Deepkin. Like, and it's because it's based around two things. One, their entire army strikes first. But two, they're just stacking up command points, waiting to spend them all on their units to give them all one or all. Three units, several plus attacks. And that's the win condition. It's just as simple as that, you know. And now the army, it seems, we talked about this a bit yesterday, it seems like the army now can survive to turn three better. It used to be a trading game with like Morsar, and what they would do is trade off little units of threes. So we saw big blocks of eels and small blocks of eels. The MSU was more of a trend eventually, and effectively they would use those little threes to just trade off objectives and smaller units until they could bring all the big units of six to crush on objectives at the time with all the stacking of Volturnus attacks. Now it's just an army that's got that two up defensive save initially, and then they've got like these throwaway, like you say, linchpin pieces that can just like hold the army back after turn one, and then they can just get to turn three, and then they're just singing and dancing all the way to the whatever the opposite of a fish market is. They're like Sebastian in Little Mermaid. They're like, under the sea, everything's better when it's turn three. I'm not going to sing anymore, but...
That was great, by the way, Rob. Also, one thing to note is a lot of their strength is just tied into their allegiance abilities, so they don't need to spend command. And there's a lot of MSU, so they're not having to spend command points on Inspiring Presence or spending command points to... you know, get force multiplication. That's just coming from the war scrolls and from the allegiance ability. So it does mean that they can be sat on three to four command points to then enact that turn three plan. And then even just little things like giving the Leviathan mount traits now is great. Like ancient minus one, ignoring minus one rend. We did see somebody take the void drum yesterday to the void chill drum, I think it's called, basically to increase the range by another 3 inches. But yeah, the main point I wanted to make just was, yeah, about the fact that they don't, unless I'm mistaken and someone can highlight it in the chat, they don't really need to spend CP on anything else. So Volty just sits at the back, just powering up, getting ready to give the all of his units an insane amount of attacks.
Yeah, it's... He does make me laugh. He's like a character from Dragon Ball Z. He's just like, anyway, so the big point is that Void Drum, like we talked about. So identity units with a wounds characteristic of 8 or less, they get plus 1 save, just a flat plus 1 save. And one of those reasons, that one of those things that we've seen working so, so well is on those Ishlan Guard. So the Ishlan are known quite often as the defensive eels, and the defensive eels have effectively an unrendable save, which is pretty tough. But you can add to their save, so it's different to Ethereal. So Ethereal was always a nice counterbalance, really, because you couldn't plus to an Ethereal save, but you couldn't minus to an Ethereal save. But now the situation is you can plus to this save, but you still can't rend it, and so you now have basically two up invulnerable save eels. Who come in points wise significantly cheaper, obviously, than the Morsars, especially as you keep adding more and more into your army. And then their output isn't significantly worse, as I understand it. I think it's about on par, really. You just have the shocks over the top. But when it gets to turn three and your whole army striking first and you've got plus three attacks on plus three attacks on all the melee weapons, it becomes really, really, really tough. It's actually a 2+, even not on the charge turn one, because you're in cover and you're in the void drum. So that takes you from a 4+ to a 2+. So turn one, you're just by standing, by grace of being there, it's a 2+. And then after turn one, if you're near the void drum, you charge and it's a 2+. That's how it works. So really, really strong. And the Leviathan's also got mortal wound impact hits, and it also is survivable in itself, right? That 2+ save. Initially, until it gets 8 wounds taken off it out of its 16 wounds is pretty significant. And then one of the upgrades we've seen taken quite recently is the Ancient, right?
Yeah, exactly. There are three mount traits available. So, yeah, Taking Ancient on the Leviathan. I'm not sure if that's the full title, but yeah, there's fundamentally people are calling it the Ancient build. So, yeah, it's ignoring that minus one rend. So, just, yeah, even more survivable. Also, the Crushing Charge is just like a Gargant charge. It's all units. So, if they've got a wound characteristic of one, then it does d6 mortal wounds to all units within an inch on a 2+ when it finishes its charge. So, and yeah, and as I say, the move doesn't bracket anymore now. So they can go in and smash screens for days. And then, yeah, a Leviathan going in all juiced up, smashing the screen, and then the whole of your opponent's army having, if it's a shooting army, having to shoot at it unless they've sort of teleported or moved out of the way. It's just a problem that your opponent, it's a big problem that your opponent has to deal with.
It's quite interesting, yeah, actually, because both of those two things. Oh, thanks, Bram Sill, for pledging. I think that means you've joined Patreon. Thanks to everyone who's joined Patreon. That's big love. And to everyone who's subscribed today, I've seen you. I'm just waiting for stream labels to open up so I can say thank you to you all. But, yeah, I think one of the things we've talked about, we were talking about the Liberators and their ability to hold objectives on a two-up save. But obviously you could still hit them with rend and knock through them. These guys can't, so it's kind of fascinating that we were on track with the play, but with the different units that are doing it. And there's also still like a bunch of attacks coming out. The Liberators also do very little damage, and the Eels can do some okay damage. I wouldn't say that they're all the way up there until they get all those buffs on turn three, but they're not bad for a fighting unit ultimately. A big upgrade. So the Marathi book has led to a big upgrade to those Ardeneth Deepkin lists, which I think is scary because they already weren't. They're already in a good place. Thank you to Crazy Horse for donating 1,000 bits to the show, and Dave Fraser and Scrunty Hoo for subscribing. You guys are great. Thanks so much for that. You got any more thoughts on the Ardeneth?
I just think you can't underestimate the fact that everything flies as well and is really fast. And it's just got so many tools. It's got the deep strike. Even though we didn't see too much of that sort of soul scryer deep striking in, the inherent strengths of the book and the war scrolls are still all there. And they've just, everything's had an uplift. I mean, GW obviously want to stop people spamming Morsar Guard. And you will see, very much as we saw yesterday, you will see some really good list variety. I mean, it's not just the Leviathan either. You've got the Storm, like Eidolon Aspect to the Storm. You could probably do a show on him now because he's gone from reroll ones to wound aura to plus one to wound aura. So I've played against Pete with his double Leviathan list. And yeah, that Storm rocking around, I think he gets to, doesn't he heal when he charges and he can retreat and charge? It's just so much sweet tech. And a lot of it is all baked into the war scrolls. And it's not necessarily like you have to line up lots of auras to make things work. They just do the thing. Yeah, it's great. Well, Christ, when we get back to playing in real life, it's going to be wonderful to see some. I think that Eidolon is one of the most beautiful models they've done. So it'd be great.
And the turtle. And I'm also excited about the turtle just being a horror. You know, like someone being like, "Fuck, it's the turtles!"
Yeah. Fear the turtle.
I was never too jazzed on the eel models anyway. So now that the turtles are out there, I think that's fun. So if you are a Ardeneth Deepkin player or planning to be an Ardeneth Deepkin player, my only real suggestion or thoughts from the weekend is you need to invest in turtles. That's right. The AOS stock market, AOS stock market. Rob says invest in turtles now because they're where it's at. Sharks also a good conversation as well, stopping the pile in. There's that, but that's a big takeaway that seems to have been a huge strength from the weekend, and it's been fun to see that come to fruition. I don't think we necessarily saw the daughter side of it work particularly well over the weekend either, but maybe there's still some more to unlock with that army.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of choices to be made for the daughter. Like there was a lot of variance in the types of daughters that were brought. I think whether to take the Shadow Queen and Marathi Kane and you know take that 600 point chunk out of your list was the big decision. But I think getting the supporting cast right. I think there'll be there's more investigation to be done with the daughter's book and the lists that'll come out of that.
Loads of stuff to unlock there, and some real techie stuff about how battalions are put together and stuff that honestly, like, not only did it go over my head, I also didn't give a shit. Like that was like super important to me that I really expressed this on this show that I didn't care less. Like, so because someone asked the other day, they were like, they were talking about FEC when I did the kind of like pack show. They were like, can you take on foot Ghoul Kings as opposed to on thing? I was like, sure, like whatever. You know, they're like, but because of subheaders, I was like, oh, I literally don't give a shit. Like, I'll call people and tell them I don't give a shit. That's how much I don't care. like, it's not a thing. Like, I don't, like, what about the Mounted King? They're like, everyone in the FEC chat is going nuts about it. I'm like, why? Who's got that time? Is the answer. The other thing I wanted to talk about was, so the Ineth, super good. Everyone in the chat really excited that you can suggest something other than eels to people who want to buy them. I think that's great. Pete is absolutely right. I already know that the Irish meta is rife with turtles. They're all over the place, so that terrifies me that they're in there. Like, I don't know if you know that, but the turtle lists were already, like, operating last year, Owen, and it was very fun to watch them try super hard, like, just screaming the word turtle.
Yeah, those. Well, it's got such a huge buff that, yeah, we're definitely going to see them on the table now, right? So, yeah, it's cool. Yeah. I'm down for that.
So then the other big takeaway from yesterday was the rise to dominance of, and now this isn't new, none of this is new, but Owen, you've been professing your love for him for a long time, is Archaon, Grand Marshal of the Ever Chosen. That's right. He captured all of our hearts yesterday when he put the frog in the sword.
Yeah, frog in the sword, slug in the sword, everything in the sword. Yeah, he's just really, really fun to play, and I would not profess to be any kind of Archaon pioneer. You know, people such as Darren, and I remember AD Mac had a plague-touched Archaon, didn't he, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, and Darren did, and lots of people, and Mark Wildman, obviously, lots of people have played wind-up Archaon for a while.
Oh, I've been on the receiving end of Jay's wind-up Archaon from Korn last year when I was over in Northern Ireland, and it was so funny. He literally tells you what he's going to do as well. He's like, I'm going to put this Archaon in your deployment turn one. And you're like, nah, of course. Nah, I'll do screen just in case. I was like, maybe he's playing mind games. No lie. He just did it. He's just like, there he is. Deal with him. And you're like, well, that's a lot to deal with. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah.
But he's only got better. He's only got better since the Slaves book, right? And definitely. The Wrath of the Everchosen book.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know that you've talked, yeah, about that War Scroll change that he got is so good. Like the Eye of Sharan.
Ed Sheeran.
Ed Sheeran, like the way that works now is fantastic. So there's so much on his War Scroll that's great, and I don't want to go over old ground, but you're now seeing the fact that he gets all the chaos marks. You're seeing him just being plugged into so many different interesting stuff. Like, I think at Sheffield Slaughter, Mark had him in Host Duplicitous Tzeentch, so not being able to retreat. And then we saw a lot of Host Arcanum at the weekend, where he really benefits from that pregame move and those unbinds. I played recently against a Slaanesh Archaon with all the exploding sixes, and you've seen him taken in Lurid Haze. Obviously, I've been repping the Korn build, but I do think that Tzeentch is the strongest one. I hate to say it, but I do think that the Tzeentch Archae is the best. But then winning out yesterday was Archaon sticking within the Slaves book, which was nice.
Yeah,
so, to see.
Yeah, let's talk about that winning list, shall we, and who ran it.
Yeah, so this is, I've got the list in front of me, but I'm just going to get the, this is Victor. So yeah, Victor Canovas. So just to give some credence to what we're talking about, there were four Archaon lists brought, and the Korn Archaon build didn't do particularly great, but the other ones, I'm pretty sure Stephen Follows with the Host Arcanum, he went 3-0. Casper, who you saw on the stream, again with a Host Arcanum with the Great Bray Shaman, he won all his games. And then yeah, Victor with Slaves, he won all his games and won the tournament by a couple of points on secondaries, so, or on auxiliaries. So yeah, this one, it's within Slaves to Darkness, and it's the Host of the Ever Chosen. So this is where you can use the Dark Prophecy command ability to determine whether who's going next. I'm 99% sure on that. I'm going to check that, but I'm pretty damn sure that it's...
So I'm going to... if you guys in the chat type exclamation mark event, it'll bring up the event right for you. And also, I'm going to bring it up on the screen right now, if you guys give me a momento. Yeah, so there we go. Bam. So you guys should be able to see that now on the screen. So as you can see, it's Slaves to Darkness has hosted. It's Victor Canavos, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
Yeah, I hope I said that right. So he's got Damned Legion, Host the Ever Chosen. He's got Archeon, obviously, but he's got the... You have to choose a mark when you take Archeon in the Slaves to Darkness army. You have to make a mark that's dominant, right?
Yes.
So he's chosen his Aura of Chaos, which is Nurgle, and he's taken the Ruinous Vigor spell. So obviously got the Chaos Sorcerer Lord, who's Nurgle, another Chaos... Oh, sorry, Chaos Lord, two Chaos Sorcerer Lords. 2x20 Marauders, a unit of Varangard, and then 8 Iron Golems, which is just a super fun pick. And then the War Shrine and the Prismatic Palisade. So he has a load of options in there, ultimately. And what did you like? I mean, should we talk about the overlapping buffs or like what?
Yeah. I mean, there's two things really. The reason why you see Archeon taken in a lot of. Sort of other allegiances is because he retains all of his chaos marks, so which means that he can benefit from double buffs from the War Shrine. But when you put him within just the Slaves of the Darkness book, he has to choose a specific mark, and then the other marks are sort of discounted. So Nurgle, you don't see him with Aura of Nurgle a huge amount. You often see these Varangard or Karangard lists, as some people call them, with you know, your big block of 9 Varangard with a mark of Nurgle or something. But him in Nurgle, there are some really nice things. So Six Circle, which is the host, sort of the sub-faction within Hosts of the Ever Chosen, essentially Archeon's aura, which you forever he's got the Aura of Chaos, so it's -1 to hit in shooting wholly within 12 of a sort of any of the marked Nurgle heroes. So straight away, all his little heroes are going to be -2 to hit in shooting when they're near units, because they're going to get lookout sir stacking with the aura. Archeon gives a bubble out of the -1 to hit in shooting, and because it's Archeon, it goes from a 12 inch to an 18 inch. So with the size of his base of 6 inches divided by 320, that's a holy within it. Yeah, that's like a 42 inch bubble around Archeon of basically his whole army is going to be -1 to hit in shooting, and then he's going to have some stacking. As
which
I say,
significant.
Yes, he's teched for the meta, because whilst there wasn't huge amounts of shooting, there was still a lot of Seraphon and some Lumineth. There was no cities or KO, but even so, people do spec for shooting, and you can see that reflected here. Another thing you get, which is really strong, and again, I was surprised by, is that in Host of the Ever Chosen, if Archeon's on the board, the whole army is Battleshock immune. So he can afford to Mask of Darkness and teleport 20 Marauders, get the Marauder charge, kill. You're always going to lose some Marauders on the swing back, but then, you know, if everything's Battleshock immune, then you've got the ability to nick those back objectives.
I also think one of the things that's important that you don't see straight off the bat is it means you aren't spending CP on anything else. You're not spending it ever on Battleshock immunity, which is again really really important. Like that CP, we saw like some CP hunger from a few of the lists we saw on the stream yesterday, and I could definitely see just being able to save 2 even the course of a game is going to change up. The efficacy of your army. Used it again. Don't stop saying it.
And Archeon giving you 2 CP every turn as well is going to help again. So he's got CP to spend to make things fight on death, which can be huge. So Archeon's command ability allows a unit to fight on death till the end of the battle round. So I can't really see. And then also he's got plenty of CP for the Chaos Lord to allow Archeon to pile in and attack twice, or even just to auto 6 run the Chaos Lord up so that he's actually in range to enact that plan. So in Tzeentch and in Khorne, he will do a lot more output, but I think he offers a little bit more force multiplication here and a little bit more protection for the whole army. He's got a really interesting choice on the spell. Often you see Mask of Darkness on Archeon, or perhaps something that allows him to fight better, but he's taken Ruinous Vigor, which is only a casting value of 6, and it allows a monster, so himself, to be treated as being at its top bracket. So Archeon doesn't bracket that badly on a lot of his profiles, but what he does lose is movement. So he's looking to keep Archeon on that that 14-inch movement and get him where he needs to be. That would be my read on why he's taking Ruinous Vigor. He then has Mask of Darkness on both the Lords. And he's got the Palisade, obviously, to protect those small heroes. So I do see it very much as, again, he's probably got a little backfield castle with the golems and the sorcerers. Perhaps one sorcerer lord is going to follow Archaon around to give him the reroll hits and wounds and give him the reroll saves. And then he can just YOLO marauders around. And then he's got a cheeky three Varenguard, which can pile in and attack twice. He's taken the sixth circle, which gives them plus one damage on the charge. So three Varenguard, again, is another little pocket unit that can go and smash stuff. So
pile in, attack twice. And yeah, like, and if you buff them up, that's one of the other things as well. I use the Varenguard, and I played some Knights of the Empty Throne lists a few times, which I really, really enjoyed. And I saw Mark was running it at the weekend as well. Just such a fun army to play around with. Those Varenguard, like, I don't know if they don't quite miss a spot. I think they're brilliant, but their application has to be very specific and get them in at the right time. You know, but like when you do give them all of the buffs, rerolls to hit, rerolls to wound, and from like demonic power, and also obviously reroll saves, they're literally that's a lot of dudes is just going to stand there. That pile and attack twice is brilliant. They're a great unit, but again, situational and really battling it out in that points department to not be 40 marauders as well.
Yeah. Another thing which is really nice, again, from the aura of from the mark of Nurgle, is that wound rolls of six are an additional pip of damage. So it really does push that up. The Varenguard will get plus one to hit, I believe, when Archaon's on the board. And with lots of rerolls, he can fish for sixes. So, you know, even 20 Chaos Marauders going in, perhaps they've been buffed with a prayer from the War Shrine. Because the War Shrine, again, the War Shrine is going to be great. It can get Archaon, give him plus one save and reroll wounds to really get that Slayer of Kings working. But like the Marauders, 41 attacks coming out of 20 Marauders that you've just, you know, teleported across the board and they've made their bonkers charge. You know, get a few sixes to wound there and they're doing double damage. Like, you know, it all does stack up. So he has got a decent bit of output to go with all of the, you know, the defensive buffs that he's got from shooting. So yeah, it works really well. I mean, I'm sure, I know that Mark Wilson played it, and he would be able to give a good summary of all the bits of tech here. As I understand it, he wasn't using Dark Prophecy. The ability to know who's going next in the next battle round is not something that he was using. So he wasn't taking Host of the Everchosen for that. I think it's probably for the battle shock immunity and the extra damage. That would be my
It's plus one damage on the charge for the Varenguard. Like, is it with Fell Spears or just plus one damage to the unit?
It's plus, yeah, six circle is add one to the damage inflicted by attacks made with melee weapons by six circle units that charged in the same turn. So they get plus one damage on the charge, the Varenguard.
Only those guys, not the Marauders or anything like that.
As I understand it, yes, because all Varenguard units in your army gain that keyword, not the other units. I think it would
mental. With the Fell Spears, though, that's taking them up to damage three, I'm pretty certain, on the charge, which is pretty wild with reroll to hit, reroll to wound. Because normally you don't take them with the Fell Spears. Normally you think, right, they're going to be in a punchy grind. But with damage three, that really changes the conversation up and makes that like a phenomenally scary unit.
Yeah.
Especially on the charge, piling attack twice on the charge. So you've buffed them, you've stuck them on the charge. That's great. That's really good. Really love that.
Yeah, and they get plus one to wound for attacks made with the Fell Spears and an additional point of rend on the charge. So they're going to be rend two, hitting on twos, wounding on threes, potentially with rerolls, rend two, and then damage three, with an additional point of rend, with an additional point of damage if he rolls a six to wound.
Yeah, so damage four coming out of those guys. That's wild. And then you pile in an attack twice, that's the time you activate them. That's actually like a massive smash unit that's like got like a one turn wombo combo. Phenomenal and awesome models. That's cool. That's really, really fun to see. I really like that. Hadn't considered doing that sixth circle, but now I can see why they're in there. I'm not saying that's the linchpin of the list, but it's, you know, it's another bonus, a Brucey bonus, I think. Is that the right term?
It could well be, yeah, I believe so. Yeah,
But it's not the only Archeon list that did well, Owen, right? Like, that's the kind of takeaway from this weekend. First place was a Nurgle Archeon list, and then second and third place were...
Second place went to Casper, who we saw on in game three. You streamed it. And yeah, he's been rocking around TTS recently, playing loads of games and doing really well with that Host Arcanum list, which we can have a quick little look at if you like.
Sure.
I think it just opens up a conversation about the strength of Archeon within Tzeentch. So Casper's list is again Archeon, but he has Kairos Fate Weaver, another Chaos Sorcerer Lord. I think regardless of where he goes, even in some Khorne lists, you always see a Sorcerer Lord. They're nothing better than just pointing at Archeon and going, you're going to reroll your saves. So yeah, the Sorcerer Lord is universal.
They just joined at the hip, aren't they?
Yeah. They're little buddies. I'm surprised they don't come, like, he doesn't come in the box now with from GW when they sell him. Although saying that...
What, like Archeon, Johan?
Yeah, exactly. Archeon, compared to the pricing that we've seen with the Mega Gargants and like, Teclis and some of the new bigger models that have come out, Archeon not only is really great fun to play, competitive as we can see, but he's a bit of a steal, I think. He's around about the... £90 mark or something, I want to say, from GW, and you get a lot of plastic for that. So yeah, I'm going to hype up Archeon as a good investment as well, because you get a lot of plastic for your dollar. But yeah, so he's got a Sork Lord, he's got a Bray Shaman, 10 Pinks, 2/3 of Screamers, Geminids, Spell Portal, Darkfire, Demon Rift. So obviously we know that the Pinks, I've got more wounds than it says, but on War Scroll Builder, that's 72 wounds, Rob, which by...
I always say, like, anecdotally, like, I think the wound average is 120 to 140. So when you start pushing up to 220, like we saw with Blagan with Ungol Raiders, yeah, and then you... but then you drop down to, like, 72, 70s, you really are talking, like, hyper elite and hyper defensive. So you think Stonehorns, and you think very survivable. But you look, you're talking about Pig Horrors, a couple of Screamers, they've all got terrible saves. So yeah, it's very light on bodies, right?
Yeah, and when he deploys, I'd imagine it's very easy to underestimate this. But again, I'm not the authority on Tzeentch, but the things that I have picked up on and seen in games is, like, everyone loves Slayer of Kings. You know, and you think to yourself, well, you can get a Shrine in there or some spell casting and you can give him those rerolls, but in Tzeentch, if he's got 2 sixes on the Destiny dice, I think, is that how he killed Croak yesterday, actually? Did he just double six from Destiny?
Yeah, he just double six from Destiny dice. I think the Destiny dice for Archeon is so clutch as well. Especially, and also just in Tzeentch, I was this year's old, ever since CanCon, when we were at CanCon last year, you were able to use the Destiny dice to modify the bravery as well. So even if you were taking Battle Shock test at 30, you could roll a 1 and it would, like, it wouldn't be affected. And then they FAQ'd it. And I honestly thought they FAQ'd it so that you couldn't even use the 1 for your Destiny dice to bring back Pinks, Owen. I've been like, they've sorted that all out, because that was bullshit. I'm really happy. Been playing games with Nathan this year. Like, he's like, oh, you're not going to use the 1? I'm like, can't use it, bro. You can't use it. They fixed it. Like, all brilliant. Then yesterday, he just used it. I was like, oh my God, it's still okay. So the Destiny dice are so good still.
Yeah, so amazing. And I mean... The one trick that you often see these Tzeentch players do, and again, excuse me, Casper did this yesterday, which is the agendas. So one of the agendas is you make a 9-inch charge plus 1 attack for the rest of the game. So I get really, you know, bogged down trying to get my Blood Secretor banner to line up with a Holy Within 16 range to give Archeon plus 1 attack. And there's lots of play around, you know, trying to get those to line up, because you've got a 4-inch move model trying to chase after and a 14-inch move model in Tzeentch. Just, you know, choose that agenda. Destiny dice your 9-inch charge, again, I believe, as Casper did yesterday. And yeah, you complete that agenda and you get plus 1 attack, which gives you 3 monstrous claws with d6 damage each, 5 Slayer of Kings to really improve the chances of, if you don't have the 2 sixes to roll on Slayer of Kings, you are increasing your chances of getting those 2 with your rerolls. Again, in this build, Host Arcanum, you know, he's allowed three units to pre-game move, or D3 units pre-game move 6 inches. They have to be able to fly. Obviously, Archeon flies. And then he's taken Infusion Arcanum, which is a spell which gives him +1 to hit and wound. And then he can get reroll to all hits and wounds from the Sork Lord. Basically, it allows you to wind him up as good and proper, put all the coins in the back of him, and then, you know, boost him off. It limits the amount of sort of risk.
Sweetness.
There's some risk. Yeah, there's some risk-free strats if you know that you can make that 9. There's still, and then that allows the you can just put Archeon in your opponent's face and say, deal with me. He is a, yeah.
Yeah, the Destiny dice charge is clutch. Like, absolutely clutch. Because the ability to guarantee you're going somewhere, especially, like, you know, you're less and less likely to make a decision. Like, if, like, I'm moving over there, cool. If I do, it's an 11-inch charge. You're like, okay, that's not my plan. I'm going to move this unit as opposed to screen. I'm going to move, like, more defensively. I'll wait a turn. You know, like, all of that stuff. But that Destiny dice, that's why he's so good in Tzeentch, is just, I will do X, and I can make insane decision Y. Normally, you know, you say, right, okay, I've measured it. Okay, he's going to need a 12-inch charge. So the other player normally won't even make that move. They won't make the move before the charge occurs, so the game state and board state changes significantly. In this situation, the Tzeentch player's like, lol jokes, here I go. And you're like, okay, like, and that's a threat just in of itself.
Absolutely. And I mean, like, if you took Casper's turn one yesterday, even the fact that he went, right, I'm taking turn one, I'm going to risk the double against Seraphon, like, that's some big balls play. If you've got to rely on rolling dice to make the 9-inch charge, and do you know what I mean? Like, all of the risk, it creates some quite low risk strategies to have some real big impact early game. Yeah. Like, again, Stephen Follows yesterday. I saw, you know, he just turn one Alfred straight into the Seraphon castle. Things like in Tzeentch, if you can get put a war shrine in there and get the Tzeentch prayer off on Archeon, he has an inherent 4+ spell ignore. And then you can stack that with the prayer from the war shrine. So you can have a 4+, 4+, just flat ignore the spell. Most of the spells will be trying to damage him with mortal wounds. And then he gets another 4+ against that, and he reflects on 6s.
And other things that you might do to a large model like that is try and, like, debuff it, like -1 to hit and those other situations. So ignoring them, obviously huge and a massive bonus, Geminids and whatnot. But then also, so ignoring those is good. And he also hits and wounds reliably because he's been buffed up to do so. So even that, like, even that kind of, like, strategy, you really have to be able to, like, stack a couple of minuses. You know, I think going into Tzeentch himself, it could be a problem. You know, -1 to hit demons, maybe a Geminid hits him. Now he's at -2 to hit, and you think, okay, bit of an issue there now. Like, he's really going to lose some of that, like, output. But, you know, you have to be prepped to do that. Like, it's a nice way of dealing with Stonehorns as well. It's a nice way of dealing with a whole bunch of models. If you've got a couple of options to drop some minuses to hit, I think of, like, going into Shining Company, again, mm-hmm. with some Geminids. So there's some ways to shut him down there. And also, if you just can't kill the thing that he's fighting, you know, and all that output, as you've talked about before, is really, really good. I feel the fact that Fire Slayers weren't there is a thing. I think bumping into Fire Slayers might cause him some grief.
I don't know. See, I don't... Again, if we talk about Tzeentch, one thing we haven't touched on is the fact that all Tzeentch demons get -1 to hit in melee in a bubble of 12 inches. So he is a Tzeentch demon, so he's inherently -1. So talk about the Fire Slayers matchup. You often see maybe 20 pole axes, 20 broad axes, but then that might, I have seen a trend more towards more of the broad axes. So Archeon into pole axes, he doesn't give a shit about pole axes because they have to reroll their 6s. So yeah, great, you do 2 mortal wounds on a 6, but you're going to reroll 6s, and then he has a 4+ save against them anyway. And then the normal attacks from those pole axes don't have any rend, so he's going to laugh at those. The broad axes, they do hit. They're going to be hitting on 4s rather than 3s, and then he's got his own Geminids in there, so perhaps he's been able to get another -1 from the Geminids there.
And he's a Tzeentch demon.
Yeah, exactly. So
-1 to hit inherently, which is just wild on a 3+ save 20 wound model. So he's just baller, and I think that's some great takeaway generally for people at home. if they're looking for a Christmas present or something to play out. He also hasn't performed so well. Like, Archeon's that kind of list that, like, often goes like 3-2-4-1. It really takes some really, really good play to push them out. A big shout out to Vito in the chat, who's playing with the Seraphon yesterday. What a babe. He had a tough time with getting that unit devolved, because that was the other thing that happened in that game yesterday. That devolved spell from the Great Bray Shaman going on Kairos was just a cool play. We've seen Kairos allied into lists several times. We used to see him allied into Sinesh lists, so you could use Slothful Stupor as another kind of like long range, like more competent caster. But that was a really fun little trick to see done as well, I think.
Yeah, he's a menace, Kairos, and I think there were just as many Kairoses yesterday as Archeons, and they. I think that little triumvirate of Archeon, Kairos, and a Chaos Lord plugs into loads of the different hosts in the Tzeentch book. Kairos's spell through the portal is a thing of beauty when you've got a lot of shooting going on, because he does flat six mortal wounds at about 36, 37 inch range from the when you're using portals, and if you just need to kill one model, and then it turns it into a chaos spawn. So if you just maybe, I don't know, a nice big block of say 40 skinks, turn one to a spawn, and then Croak's going to have to use spell casting to clear that spawn out of the way to free up the unit to shoot something else. And if you don't have any hero phase ability to clear five wounds of spawn, then your big combat block or your big shooting block is just going to be tagged in there. I mean, and it can create some beautiful moments. Like yesterday, we saw Stephen Follows turn a Saurus Guard into us. I think it was a Saurus Guard. He turned into a spawn, who then did three wounds to Croak in combat with his fucking gribblies.
It's a really good play into shooting armies anyway. I always used to like it on the Zangor Shaman, and it's still available there on the Zangor Shaman as well. Also something you can put into the Tzeentch force as well, or Beast of Chaos does the same thing, another like d3 and gets you a spawn. And I guess, I mean, there's a double that there's, you know, it's a two win, right? D3 mortal wounds, sweet free model that can do some fighting. I'll take that all day. Like, it feels like, Owen, there's a meme list somewhere where all you're trying to do is generate spawn. There's one somewhere out there.
Possibly. It might even... I think there was a moment yesterday as well where there were spawns popping up everywhere, because against Blagan, he was playing Gabe spawn, so every time one of his heroes died, then it turned into a spawn, and then Kairos was turning things into spawns. It's just like, fucking... Oh, my God. MJ Pegasus...
MJ Pegasus is always on it. Always on it. Spawn Hub. That's what it's going to be called. Congratulations. A prize to anyone who can come up with the best spawn list. Please do send it to me. I'd be fascinated already.
I can hear Colonel Cabbage is sharpening his pencil as we speak. He's ready to go.
18 spawn.
Loads of fun to be had there in building. It's like a builder bear factory, but builder Archeon. And, you know, you just however you want to wind him up and whatever you want to make him do. Fundamentally, he's going to fly around whomping loads of stuff. Mm. And as a counterpoint to all this Archeon love, you've often got a choice as when you play against it. It's like, I don't know.
Kill everyone else or kill him.
Exactly. General wisdom is that you kill everything else. But I think it's harder to kill all the stuff in a Tzeentch build than, say, in a Khorne build. And even on his own, he can do so much work because he's a demon, so he can summon. So if you have the ability to summon in your list, then, you know, obviously in Sinesh he's using Depravity, in Khorne he's using Blood Tithe, or in Tzeentch he's using Fate Points. But he's still an amazing hub for... I often think of him like as a sort of... He can move somewhere 14 inches and then summon 12. So you can basically put... some objective scoring unit 26 inches away from his starting position at the start of the movement phase, and then once he's dropped off some kids, you know, to go and, you know, hold that objective, then he'll then go and kill a load of other stuff somewhere else. You know, he'll charge off and kill some stuff. That's why it's fun in Khorne, because he's generating blood tithe, summoning, you know, plopping out some blood letters, going over somewhere else, killing some more stuff. So he's all things to all people. He's just a wonderful fun to play.
I mean, at least it's a fun Christmas time as the beginning of Christmas Rob starts. Like, you're like, what am I going to get myself? I see Henry sitting on the chat. It's like, might order an Archeon. I would love to see Henry paint up an Archeon.
Oh,
like,
fuck
yeah. That would be great. Ziggy, just answer your question. Assume the Brayshame was dragging units closer to the big lad as well. He could, or Kairos could cast his spell to do the same thing, which Vito was already in the chat earlier said Kairos was just getting all his spells off on 12s. Not forgetting that Kairos is a Lord Chain, so he'll change the lowest dice to the highest dice roll in his when he casts a spell. So if you're on a 5, it becomes inherently a 10. So like you've only got to proc 1-6 on 2 dice and basically can't stop you. It's kind of good. Like I kind of prefer reroll casting over that, but whatever. It's still decent for spell casting on Kairos. It means there's some more effectiveness. Obviously, with Destiny Dice, you could pick a result as well.
And he's got his Oracle, of course, which we haven't talked about. The Oracle I believe it's called the Oracle of Eternity, the ability to change the one dice, which again came in clutch in game 3 yesterday, I think, didn't it?
Yeah. Turn a run roll, Vito's run roll into a 1. And Vito was looking to get a little bit further across the board, unfortunately. I mean, also the minuses to hit from that army as well, Geminids, and the inherent like minus 1 to hit in melee is also a significant kind of boost that you don't, that generally doesn't get talked about enough inside Zeech. You know, that conversation like where it's like, it's inherently a minus 1 to hit army quite a lot of the time is a good conversation. Like, you know, you would see Griffeather Charm, a whole bunch of different minus 1 to hit artifacts, like clutch in very, very big tournament winning lists that have dominated the meta across years. And now they're just like, cool, I am that without any other minuses. I don't have to take an artifact to do that. I get the minus 1 to hit and I'm doing another thing. So it's actually a significant boost to the army, which is why I think you do see it do so well quite often. You know, because it throws the numbers around on lots of things, especially monsters. There's a lot of conversations about stuff that's might as well to hit, which is why it's always like bang it down with some Geminids and you're just having a great time.
Yeah. It's funny. We've got a few of the players in the chat here now. Vito's and Ridge are talking about what Archeon Kairos was able to do. And I think Casper's in the chat there as well. So, yeah, well done yesterday, Casper. That was a good performance. There are also some... Charlie's mentioned, I think, because we're obviously going to wrap up soon. He said, before we go, I think we need to shout out Bundo and Janice and pour one out for Gotrek. So, yeah, there were some fun stories around in the mid tables. It's not always about these, you know, the top tier lists. But there's a Vargulf courtier called Janice, who's played by a chap called Hippie Chef. And she runs around and does a lot of work. She was the one that killed 30 Sisters of Slaughter and left a cauldron on one wound over a double activation. A Vargulf, this is. Janice was a bit of a star of yesterday. And then I believe there was some big Gargants, crackety to Gargants, who were able to boot around some objectives. So, yeah, there were a lot of fun was had by all, I believe. Good day.
Quick last bit. Owen, I don't know if you've seen, but the Kainite Shadowstalkers from Warcry. Big shout out. If you want to go back and listen, Smorgan did a great show where you can. He did like a PowerPoint presentation on just how good the Kainite Shadowstalkers are or how good he thought they were. They came in at 100 points. We were talking about the fact at the time that a lot of the Warcry Warbands sit around that 70, 80 point mark previously. So that they are more expensive. You got any thoughts on them, Owen?
I mean, if you think about it, there's been a lot of chat. Let's have a look at some comparative units. So let's take some Tree Revenants. Again, they've got a limitless teleport. We're talking about 80 points, so they're 20 points cheaper. They are elves. They've got a 5-up save in the same way as the Shadow Stalkers. But the Stalkers, I think the hero gets 3 wounds and there's another 8 models. That's 11 wounds. So you're getting over...
minus 1 to hit.
Minus 1 to hit in melee. The one thing I just keep coming back to is the fact that the hero has got a fantastic combat profile. I believe it's 3 attacks, 3s and 3s, minus 1 D3 damage. She's minus 1 to hit inherently. That's just like having a little teleporty hero who can just pop around. Like if somebody leaves...
with some ablative wounds.
Yeah, precisely. Yeah, that's how I see it anyway. And I mean, I think if you... Yeah, I just see them as... the best version of that sort of teleporty, hassly kind of keep your opponent honest sort of unit. There may be ways to really buff them up within the Daughter's book. I mean, if you can get some Geminids and make them minus two to hit, they might actually be a really real problem to shift. But yeah, I think for 100 points, if, again, if you dip into the Cities book, slightly different, but the Shadow Warriors, 10 points more. They've got a wound less with the same save. But once they're down, they're down. And you've even got, I believe, is there mortal wounds on the shooting as well from the Shadow Stalkers?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the other thing I would say is, like, if you actually look at the application of the armies that they're going into, Daughters of Cain, like, traditionally, almost always, would have a couple of units of Heart Renders. They'd be in there. Couple of unit Heart Renders, like, and we even saw like a 3-0 list from Antu go 3-0 yesterday, and he had Life Takers as well. But generally, Canary units that fly, but units that are fast or can teleport and go grab objectives. Chameleon Skinks, another good example of a unit you see a lot of play. They do the same role. These guys are just better in that role for an army that wants them in there as well. Cities of Sigmar, same thing. They've got access, like people have taken, as you said before. They've taken them in Cities of Sigmar. Not this unit. They've taken the other unit, the Bow Elves. I forgot their name.
The Shadow Warriors.
Yeah, Shadow Warriors. They've taken Shadow Warriors previously. Even though these guys are then effectively better than the Shadow Warriors, they do a better job in that role. So into the armies that they're going into, those armies already want that unit. They're like, give me that unit. I already want it. And now there's a better unit that's got better stats for the same points value at that role. So I think you're going to see, it's going to see play. Does it break the game? No. Like, it's just a really, really strong additional new element for everyone to plug and play into their army. So I think that makes loads of sense.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah. Agreed. And we want stuff to be good, right? Because they're amazing models. Like, those models are beautiful. So yeah, it'd be nice to see them on the table.
Yeah, it'll be super good. Oh, Owen, thanks for today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to everyone who has joined us. It's going to be fun to see what events are happening sometime soon. Keep your eye out for any new Hammer Time events that Owen's going to organise, or to any more events. I think we're going to try and cover some more TTS events sometime soon. Had a great time yesterday, even if it is a bit tiring today.
yeah. I've got one little shout out, if that's okay, Rob.
Oh, please do.
TTS tournaments. Age of Sebmar, Seb from the South London Legion. He's running a little 40k TTS one day at the weekend. I have got an invite link for the Discord somewhere. Could we put it in the show notes actually for this video?
Yeah, of course,
is that okay? I'll dig that out. But yeah, there's a little one day going on again. TTS. A lot of the South London Legion guys are playing a lot of 40k at the moment, so it's quite a rich sort of vibrant meta going on there. So if anybody would like to join that, then I believe Seb's given me the green light for broadcasting this. So yeah, if anybody wants to play a day's 40k on, I believe it's on Sunday, I think it's the 12th, yeah, whatever day the 12th is, Saturday or Sunday this weekend. Adam Mumford is planning an event on the 19th of December, which you can get some information about on the Hammer Time Discord. So yeah, I'll give you
again,
this.
Might do some coverage of.
yes
yeah, but as long as it's not too stupid. We'll see. Anyway, thanks everyone for joining us. Thank you. You'll find in the show notes all the links that you'll need. Thank you to everyone who's joined us live. I see you all. MJ Pegasus, Ridge Hannah, VO, Pete, what up? Hope you're well, man. Dave Fraser, Iron Gauntlet, hope you're all good. Colonel Cabbage. And then thank you to everyone on the Gaming Patreon. And thank you to everyone who's subscribed or joined us, and to everyone on the podcast. Please do stay hydrated. And as always, you guys have a great day, and fuck you, buddies.
Thank you.